are the voyages of the Starship Bubatron, our five-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new shows and new video games, to boldly go where no woman with a fro has gone before.
Welcome back to another episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. And I'm actually recording pretty early for me because I started this day looking at the news and it was so depressing. And what I'm going to be talking about on the show today with NASA news and Star Trek corners and reading from listeners really makes me happy. And I hope you will enjoy this episode, and thanks for listening. Lucky Star from Madonna. This is going to be a top 40 1980s, 1990s flashback with a little bit of a twist. I decided to include the music in this episode because I'm going to be just talking and just daydreaming about the stars. And isn't it fitting? One, I'm old. Just, I'm going to put that out there. Turn 50 this year, so I'm excited about that, but I am finally the age of my parents, and it's cracking me up. And in fact, unfortunately, my mother did not live to see 50. She passed away with metastatic breast cancer, so I will always keep that in the back of my mind and working on my health, etc. But when I daze and daydream about the stars and think about NASA, I decided in this particular episode to include music that not only reflected the Star Trek franchise, also just had to do with stars and space and sci-fi, etc. And I'm hopeful that I actually did a really good job with that. But Madonna, you know, except for the Star Spangled Banner and some other goofy stuff, I did not or could not find any more music than I actually came up with Star in the title. So, and what I was alluding to in the intro before, and I didn't want to get cut off before the Starship Bubatron intro ran out, was it was a couple of things. I'm taping earlier than usual because I decided to use the hour leading up to me clocking in just to do the podcast, because I promised myself during the crap show that was 2020 and the election leading up to presidential elections in 2020 that I was not going to watch the news or anything that was going to make me sad. And the news for the last couple of days has been just that. So I endeavor to bring positivity into this world and hope, at least. Hopeful for a better future. Hopeful for a future filled with scientific discovery and truth. My heart is broken and it truly does bleed for all of the people that have lost their lives in the past, just not even a whole full week. First in Atlanta. And yes, that is a hate crime that happened when all those women, their businesses were targeted just because someone couldn't control their sexual fetish or control themselves from a sexual standpoint. He went off on these people, innocent people, and you can't even get your nails done in this country without somebody opening up with an assault rifle. You can't even go to the grocery store, King Super. I swear, when I used to work in Colorado, I've actually was a patron of that store, and how all of those people were gunned down, and even the policeman lost his life responding as he was trained to do, leaving behind 7 children, heartbroken families. And then we got people like Rafael Dumbass Cruz with his hands up. It wouldn't have changed anything. You mean making sure that we have mental health is not brought to forbearance because the dude may have been paranoid or delusional, or doing a background check? Or why do we have assault rifles to the general public? Closing a loophole in the background check and the gun legislation, and taking and not having assault rifles in the hands of citizens. Unless you're in the military, you don't need an AK-47. You don't need an AR-15 or 17, whatever, this Ruger that nut in Colorado had. I'm sorry. I'm in open carry state. I live in Tennessee. We have some pretty lax gun laws here, but I don't think, and you're not going to tread on my Second Amendment right by closing those loopholes and taking away high power, high magazine fire gun. We don't need that here. And removing that from people does not infringe on my Second Amendment right. And I'm really tired. And that's why I'm glad if I have these legislators that are ridiculously stupid, that the intent of the Second Amendment is the right for citizens to bear arms from an unjust government. And I'm still thinking about how I'm going to approach a special broadcast about that in particular. But you can't tread on someone's rights when you basically are closing the loopholes on background checks and having AR-15s out of the hands of just regular people, because regular people don't need AR-15s, but we do need to be protected from people that don't need to bear arms at all or can't because they are clearly behaviorally challenged. They don't need those guns. I'm sorry. And sometimes you got to look at the practicality and the overall of what is the overall good of society. I'm not saying I'm going to take away your 9 or your Glock or Ruger, your handgun, or your ability to for hunting rifles. You just don't need an AR-15. Nobody, a civilian, does not need an AR-15. I don't know where y'all live, but we just don't. And it doesn't make any sense. But with all of that said, they came after Vice President Harris, but I think she was very direct and could redirect without being too shrill, and you're not going to play her. I saw a smidge of what I can only gather was her day as a prosecutor, and when she's not heard and taking and how I'm sure she handled herself on the Senate floor. They came for her and they wanted answers now. And she basically redirected them and she was right. What's going to change? You could have a knee-jerk response, but the lasting effects, and this goes back to why y'all keep making me constitutional lawyer. And it gets on my nerves because these newscasters are they just want a knee-jerk reaction. Having an executive order is not lasting as having a legislation. And she was very, very clear on that. You want people to act now, but if you have this bit and it goes nowhere, if you don't have the laws to back it up to affect the great change, and that's what she actually came back to. And she also appealed to, they wanted her to have this knee-jerk reaction and blah, blah, blah. But no, we saw a slew of executive orders from the last administration that basically dismantled the whole system because they had the legislation. They had these lawmakers repealing a lot of these laws. That is how you demolish a democracy. But what you can do is to go about it methodically, get the legislation in act to be able to back up any executive order or vice versa. Maybe that's what they wanted her to do. The only way that Trump was able to destroy this country was by doing a whole bunch of executive orders and then having the back of a Republican-controlled Senate that was able to repeal the very laws that he wanted to undo. And if we could actually have both of those engage, maybe we would actually get somewhere. But I'm glad I stopped watching it, because I would have been spinning my wheels and just basically, I've taken up too much of the show talking about things that are actually really depressing. But I'm hopeful that these things will pan out. And if the executive orders are in alignment with the now majority Senate is absolutely able to do, I think we'll be able to do. You don't want to force people to do what they don't really want to do, but when you got to force them to do what they have to do, sometimes you just got to go out like that. I'm just saying. But anyways, photos of the day. But before I get to that, because I want to replay some more, a little bit more Madonna when before I get to the NASA nerd news, is mad shout out to all of my worldwide listeners. I'm actually 3,000 downloads and counting, and I'm just tickled pink. Woo! Thank you, me! Woohoo! Anyways, vast majority of my listeners come from the United States, from a variety of places, with Tennessee having the mass majority. You can't have a show called Tenfro is Reading, or your hook or handle is Tenfro, and should not have as many people from Tennessee listening to the show. So big ups from Tennessee. Thank y'all for listening. And then people are listening to me in Germany and the UK and in Spain and Saudi Arabia, of all places, in Austria. Welcome, y'all. and I'm just very, very happy and just overjoyed about my listenership across the globe. I'm hopeful that I keep bringing the content, again, that brings you joy. You learn something from it, and that goes on to make your day happy. I wish I could promise to be as consistent and publishing first thing in the morning, but that's not probably going to consistently happen. I'm just going to be real with y'all. I go to sleep sometimes a little bit early, and staying up doing the podcast late into the night is just not my stick. And then the only reason why I have time this morning is because I shut the TV off and won't listen and did not listen to or watch the news. And I'm probably not going to watch it. I'm going to get a blurb about who's going to be on. The reason why I watched it as long as I did this morning is because I wanted to see Vice President Harris speak. But other than that, I had to shut it off. But anyways, so on to the rest of the podcast. And I think that Madonna song is perfect for this part of the podcast, because I'm going to be talking about the first in my picture, my collage, is a stellar ending. This is also the main image for the Star Trek notes. And if you guys have been noticing that, I basically just ping back or make a connection back to the full podcast notes, because what I found is not everyone on Podbeam have these really extensive podcast notes. So I do a couple of blurbs or shout outs for my online bookstore, and then I talk about and then I have the link back to my blog on WordPress, my Dale's Angels Inc. blog, where I have more details with the pictures that I'm talking about in the show, links to toys that I've bought, and also when I have like YouTube videos also embedded within the blog post. It's actually a great way for me to tie all of those platforms together. And I'm a very visual person, so finding all of these pictures that are actually almost copyright free and using them in my post, especially the information through NASA, my information through my post, just makes it a lot like a multimedia publication, and I actually enjoy creating it. And then this week in particular, this is the artist rendition of the constellation from, I believe this is in Sagittarius. More 11,000 years ago, a massive supergiant star came to an end. The star's core collapsed to form an incredibly dense ball of neutrons, and its exterior were blasted away in an immense release of energy, which astronomers call supernova. The light from this supernova first reached Earth from this constellation around 1667. And if anyone alive at the time saw it, they left no records. It's likely that large amounts of dust between the dying star and the Earth dim the brightness of the explosion to the point that it was barely, if at all, visible to the unaided eye. And that's where I wanted to make sure that I was going to need to look up 1667. What's going on? 1667 history in the U.S. because it was, we were here. 1492, we were discovered. We had a war going on or between Europe, and there was a Russo-Polish war. There was an earthquake in Russia. Louis XIV abolishes the pound. He appoints a chief of police. But then that same year, he wages war. There was, this is a little bit tidbit. June 15th of that year, Dr. Jean-Baptiste Denis transfuses the blood of his sheep to a 15-year-old boy. And the operation was a success, but the patient dies probably from sepsis and transfusion related because the blood was definitely not matched. You don't transfuse that way. It would have been better if he had gotten the blood from one of his parents, but there you go, for the all for science. But there is no record of especially in that particular year, astronomical findings, if there's anybody that has researched it. But what the whole thing was, the closest we probably have was the world was actually too caught up in its shenanigans and wars and rumors of wars to be looking upward. It really wasn't until a little bit later that year that maybe Galileo, and it was 1690, that the Stellaberg Observatory started making observations and contributions to astronomy. There was a black box. Because the lenses that we would have needed to have such a discovery probably did not come until Johann Francisco Grendel in 1687 created such map of the moon, 1647. Johann Hevelius. Maybe he saw something. Or maybe we just missed it, because Galileo, as far back as 1610, heard about the invention in the Netherlands of these early microscopes and telescopes. So maybe he, or if it was destroyed in a rampage of religiosity, who knows? Because I'm thinking between Galileo in 1610 and Johann Baer in 1661, and the supposition of constellation figures on star maps were absolutely probably accurate. And I'm wondering if somewhere buried in their notes or their text that they actually made the observation of this, or if we had the math that was available, had these observations and being able to visualize this heavenly body from so long ago. I'm going to have to do a little bit more research, because 17th century astronomy, I think the secrets of I think what we're seeing now and being able to basically verbalize now, it's been buried in somebody's notes. And I'm always goes back to, none of what we're actually experiencing now is absolutely new. We're talking about processes that started thousands of millennia and millennia ago. And I bet in their rudimentary speech and their rudimentary calculations, I bet these brothers and sisters, maybe we wouldn't know, these observers, early scientists basically made the observations that we are portraying, and that is more widely available now. So hats off to science nerds as far as that. And we can't start, it can't end the session without thinking about spring has really sprung. I've seen evidence of the cherry blossoms and pear blossoms blossoming all over Mississippi Avenue. And the same thing about the spring equinox being enjoyed on our most closest neighbors in this solar system. And this is, I also included a picture of Saturn's rings as portrayed from the faithful robotic explorer Cassini. The image is from 2009, but is apropos and republished for our enjoyment now, because at equinox, or in this particular case, the spring equinox, the shadow of the planet's expansive rings are compressed into a single narrow band cast onto the planet as seen in this mosaic. Okay? At this time, so close to equinox, illumination of the rings by sunlight reflected off the planet vastly dominates any meager sunlight falling on the rings. Hence, half of the rings on the left illuminated by planet shine, and then extends to catch any substantial sunlight, giving it the amazing contrasting. Contrast between being able to show Saturn's rings. Oh, I think that's so amazing. And last but not least, this is awesome, because come April 1st, and yes, I have marked it on my calendar, you nerdies. Take a sip of coffee. I am going to endeavor to actually get the latest release from LEGO's space exploration pieces. Check it. We have noticed or know of the shelving of this impressive bit of technology. I remember distinctly as a kid being outside at PE at Newtown Road Elementary School and watching the 747 carrying, I don't recall which shuttle it was, but it was flying overhead. So me including the space shuttle Enterprise, and of course, why wouldn't I have a picture of Space Shuttle Enterprise? I'm talking, this is Star Trek, almost a podcast episode, almost dedicated in large part to Star Trek. But why wouldn't I have this shuttle included? And I think it's been over 20 years or 25 years hence that we've since shelved the shuttle program. And this is Enterprise being offloaded at the Redstone Airfield before it was moved to Marshall's for dynamic testing. This particular Marshall, the testing site, will play a role in the Artemis program, which is meant to be the backbone of sending humans back to the moon and then on to Mars. But I find it awesome that in the release of this and celebration of this milestone in our space odyssey, so to speak, NASA, in conjunction with LEGOs, is on April 1st, is releasing a 2,000-piece shuttle for big kid nerds like myself.
D'ailleurs qui font baiser les miens, en rire qui se perdent sous sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de la moquelle.
And yes, that is Lady Gaga singing La Vie en Rose from A Star is Born. Yes, I have to have more star music. And this is what my search in Apple came up with. And I think that's great. La Vie en Rose is life in happy hues. And this is how I'm going to end this section of the beautiful supernova from the constellation Cassiopeia, looking at the rings and the beautiful Enterprise shuttle. And then the great announcement about the LEGO's NASA Space Shuttle Discovery that's going to be released on April 1st. It's on my calendar. I'm going to be sitting there like the release of a new iPhone because I want this thing. And when you're a nerd and you have disposable income, this is the crap that you buy. So on to the next part of the show. CQ1, what exactly is that? Well, that is Club Quarantine's first anniversary. Collaboration between Neo and D-Nice, who hasn't dropped anything, in like 30 years makes me want to get up and do the Running Man. It has a great mix of 1970s disco and early 80s, 90s dance, and I love it. Again, that's No Plans for Love by Ne-Yo and Kent Jones on Club Quarantine in celebration of his first anniversary. And for those of you not familiar with this Instagram live compilation, it basically started as a Zoom party to celebrate music. And all the major DJs actually logged on in celebration because it was just on the 19th, which was last Friday. But it basically started at D-Nice's. It looks like there's a background. I'm not sure where he is, but it does not look warm. It almost as if it started in March or April, he may be in the snow somewhere, but he was basically just started playing music and he was sharing his stories because in the crap show that was last year, the music basically paused and stopped. And this was his way of keeping the music going. And it brought a lot of people hope and happiness. And I've not, because I have ADD, I have not tuned in for it in its entirety, but I hope you will enjoy the sharing of the new Ne-Yo's song, No Plans for Love. You can actually stream it from within the podcast notes that are on my blog, Dale's Angels Inc., or you can navigate to Apple's Music and just play it, download and play it for yourself, because it's actually a great song. And it's a hype way to get your shoulders moving and just get the blood moving on a day. So I'm going to leave you with a bit more of that for your pleasure. That first night, she said that I'd be coming back and she was right. Jerry Goldsmith, and what a great way to start this part of the podcast. There's a lot going on, it appears, in the Star Trek realm of it all. I love this part because it gives me the opportunity to nerd out on some of the best Star Trek, the best Star Trek ships that. Because I subscribe on Instagram, again, because I'm a visual person, it's called The Ships of Star Trek. I don't listen to the podcast, but I absolutely love the animation that they use in creating these ships. CGI is the bomb, as well as just the whole technology involved in creating, not just this podcast and the whole Star Trek brand. A lot of the things in special effects that we enjoy across the board in movies, I think it can be applied even to the Marvel franchise, that a lot of it has been developed through Star Wars and Star Trek. So big ups to us for that. But this week I have posted the ships that have the highest ranked post, all of Voyager. We see Voyager flying into a solar flare and then it leaving space dock, which I think is great because in Star Trek news this week, the Star Trek Voyager documentary name has been announced. It's called To the Journey, Looking Back at Star Trek Voyager. And I also have the link to the crowdfunding page because these guys, the film company, I think it's called 466, has done this before, has done it twice before. They actually successfully raised money to create a documentary about Spock. And also, my most favorite DS9 documentary, which I did not know was even in existence. So, poo-poo on me for that, for not being educated. Dennis McCarthy, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the theme from the first episode of The Emissary. And it wasn't until I started preparing this particular section of the podcast that I wasn't even aware. Well, on a subliminal level, maybe, I was aware of how it seemed that Deep Space Nine did not get the same coverage or respect, as you will, as the other franchises. For example, when I spoke about the previous part, I've noticed that even in fandom and in one of my favorite Instagram accounts that I follow, the Ships of Star Trek, it is very noticeable that it is very starship heavy, you know, the typical based on the Enterprise models, A through, what is it now, F. And I get that. If you want to look at from a fan standpoint, DS9 was a very different bird. When it premiered, there was no follow-up to the very highly successful Star Trek Enterprise, to Next Generation. And then there was a series of movies. And then there was DS9. And then in a competing slot, there was also Star Trek Voyager. Don't get me wrong. Love Star Trek Voyager. I think it followed the formula of what you would expect from the Star Trek franchise. But what I liked so much about DS9 was the characters and the depth of the characters. There's an argument that they're supposed to be out exploring and blah, blah, blahzy, 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 but they're stuck on this space station. But it was like the universe was coming to them. If you look at the United Federation of Planets, the star chart, and yes, I'm looking at it now because I'm a nerd and I have them posted that in the former Romulan Empire, so shut up. But anyways, if you would look at where Deep Space Nine was absolutely located, it is on the edge of the transition between the Alpha Quadrant and, you know, Gamma Quadrant. And then the wormhole opened up a whole possibility of exploration just by its location. And it's not like there's not already a race of people there or several races of people there that they would not have ordinarily come across or interacted with if they had not discovered that wormhole. For example, after the Bajorans and Cardassians ended their civil war, there's still issues with what are they called? They are colonists that, because of to end a Cardassian war, they would actually, they were United Federation of Planets colonists, but they would have to be uprooted and then tossed out. And they, the Maquis, and I believe, wasn't it also during this time that there was still issues with the Palestinians being expelled from their settlements, and there was something very similar going on in Kenya and in South Africa with the expulsion of families that had been there for generations, but then they were actually exposed when the governments had actually changed. So with that said, it wasn't like there was the turmoil and the angst and the drama that you would expect from a franchise. It wasn't bad. It was a great show. And the premise that because they were mostly located on that space station, that it was not the same and it was outside of what Gene Roddenberry, what he stood for, or what his franchise was supposed to embody, I honestly think that they missed the point. The point was that the interaction, it was how we deal with interaction, man with man and with other potential species. If man is to survive, he will have learned to take a delight in the essential differences between men and between cultures. So if that, and that's Gene Roddenberry said this about his franchise and how he looked for the interaction and the creation of the Star Trek universe. Because if we could somehow treat non-humanoids well and learn how to live with, how better can we live with each other here on Earth? And so he wanted, I'm thinking in my mind, why couldn't DS9 or subsequent franchises be a reflection of the status of today? I think they did it well. The creation, I call them the trifecta of evil. The Dominion, the Jem'Hadar, who the fighters, and the snivelly little Vortas. I thought the character Avery played Ben Sisko to a point, and I completely forgot that he was Hawk, a man called Hawk, goateed and bald, and it took them like 3 seasons to get him back to what he really looked really good. And how they had to kind of blunt his sexiness, because far be it from society to have a black man that is in charge of an entire sector in leadership divisions. Number one, being a great father, who he was to the character that played Jake Sisko, but also to be a captain on a space station and manning even the little ship that could, the Defiant, because that is what that particular series was. It was in defiance of expectations, and it was a defiance against putting people that are not usually in positions of leadership between all the women, Dax and Major Kira, and even the Ferengis, which is hysterical, and Worf. How it strove to be, to have its own unique place in the Star Trek verse, but it was limited by the low expectations and how they kept them in these low expectations. And it was reflective on why the Jadzia character, she left, because they offered her a crappy contract and there was no negotiations. And how would you treat someone that was so popular in a show that was so popular in lore? Even the people, the executives, treated them like they were third rate. So they felt third rate. And they also, there was a preponderance of negative publicity and backlash from diehard Star Trek fans when these white supremacist races would never have, because they're so limited, they can't see beyond the limitations of what the true meaning of this franchise was supposed to be. If they were going to limit it to a bald head white dude from England, what is the purpose of that? Or from France, what is the purpose of that when it should be a reflection of the society and all the fan base and not just a very small select few? The set effects and from the themes that they actually undertook, because this was also a time period when we first time we watched Rodney King being brutalized by LAPD, the trial, all of this took place. And this turmoil of the present time took place even then. And this show actually dropped in the mid-90s. The sad part is, not much has changed. The violence is still there. And we're still being murdered in the streets. And by we, we're talking about black men and women. And also being murdered in their beds, as Breonna Taylor was. But the why of it all, why the themes and some of the things that they undertook still hold true today, because some of these societal issues are still being played out and still need to be addressed. I think they missed a grand opportunity for if they could have been not so scared, because they took a lot of risk. Trying to be that reflection and navigating through the bureaucracy and the ratings and what does it all mean. But now we're starting to see a surge, resurgence of popularity with people like me that are revisiting the podcast, the franchise, finding out about the documentary itself, which I find to be excellent. It's actually available for free through the 466 crew that on YouTube, and you can actually watch it, What We Left Behind. It was released in 2019. I have embedded the link, YouTube link, within my podcast notes, but it's age restricted. So you're going to have to go to navigate directly back to YouTube to be able to watch it. But I find it was amazing. It was the little nuances and the things that were going on in the background. All of the showrunners like Michael Piller, he is no longer with us. Cisco's dad passed away not too long ago. I think the Betazoid, the female that was had a love interest with Odo, she passed away. And also the character that played Rom's son. It is Jake, and he actually passed away. Nog. Nog also passed away a couple of years ago, or 2019, through renal failure. And the interaction with the Ferengis and the crew, and the expectations of like how some of the characters, they took their roles very, very seriously. And they would get together and they would practice, and how all the Ferengi actually looked like their characters with all that makeup, the long days. I know all of them were unionized, but they were working 14 to 16 hour days because they wanted to get it correct. And there was such a low expectation from the studio execs, as well as the smaller fan base, that they were going to excel even against the odds. And how they worked and they interact, and they still interact and are still friends to this day, I found absolutely amazing. I'm actually very glad that I wish they could have, if it just hadn't been the guy that plays Julian Bashir, because I hate that character. I wish, but they were talking about the possibility of Garen and then Julian coming out as gay and having them to be the first gay couple to be on the show, because I think both of those characters are men are actually out and gay in real life. But that would have been an interesting dynamic. I just don't think, I believe it wouldn't be believable to me because I hated Bashir so much. And then how much that Julian Bashir, he finally got the girl because he was definitely in love with the Jadzia character. But he finally did get, and he could never smack her, but he finally got Ezri, who I didn't like anyways. I think she was a lower Dax symbiont, and because she actually was transplanted or implanted with the hope as a host, almost as an emergency to save the Dax symbiont. But at the same time, it's like she basically got a worksheet, a handout on how to become Dax, and she was never in the same program, and I don't believe never on the same level as the previous Dax host. So, but that's just me and my personal opinion. And because I love the original Jadzia Dax so much, that this Ezri Dax that came on in the last year of this particular franchise tripped me out a little bit. But in all honesty, you got to believe and you got to understand that this is a science fiction. But I think they honestly did miss a point when they could have used what they called the darker Star Trek episode, and that's not lost on me. Look at all of the main characters and the captain, Benjamin Sisko, who anchored this potentially award-winning show. It's a reflection of society and the ills, and you want people to be entertained, but you also want them to be educated. And looking at this particular microcosm of society, and it really isn't, it's a macrocosm of society. This is a true reflection about current society and how they, even though they don't like each other, they learn how to work together within boundaries. A little bit of drama. Sometimes they have to fight their way through it or punch through it, but they ended up excelling and exceeding all expectations, and I thought it was just brilliantly done. And that is books that you should be reading, or the beginning of this particular part of the episode, excuse me, y'all. That is Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, by the late, great Aretha Franklin. And it's apropos because there is a, I believe it's on Hulu or Netflix, about her, a biopic about her life. And I actually have added this as well as many other books by authors that I think you should be reading, in particular Colson Whitehead of the Underground Railroad and the Nickel Boy fame, The Colossus of New York, Raphael Cormack, Midnight in Cairo, highlighting the divas of Egypt's Roaring Twenties. That seems like it's going to be a great read. Floating in a most peculiar way is a memoir by Louis Chidi Sokai. This is the first his first effort that is getting high praise from people like the Oprah and a placement in her book club. Also, The Last Call, A True Story of Love, Lust, and Murder in Queer New York by Elon Green. All of these books, as well as other items I've actually added to my online book club, Chatterbooks. Check it out, y'all. I think you'll enjoy it. All of these, as well as several other books in my rapidly expanding offerings on the online bookstore website. The link is directly in the podcast notes, so again, check it out, and I get a percentage, as well as other local providers actually get a percentage of the sales. That is the first few riffs off of Wild Signal by John Williams from Close Encounter of the Third Kind. And I think this is a great way to, as a lead into this section of Sci-Fi Corner. I'm going to continue my writings in my first endeavor as far as the listeners. Trust and no regrets. Oops. It would help if I were to, I wish I absolutely had a sound person and somebody that could actually transcribe this, because this would make my life so much easier, but I don't. So here we go. The front gate buzzer sounds, and Felicity's cousin submits herself to a retinal scan, and then she points behind her. There is a blacked out SUV parked and idling, and it pulls off as soon as the camera focuses on it. She notices no tags, but her glasses also are equipped with a high quality camera that takes some pictures of the driver and a side view image of the passenger. Their photos are reconstructed and then ran through the facial recognition software that have been perfected by her cousin Felicity and her husband Dahl. So by the time she parks and enters the house, she grabs some fresh coffee in the kitchen. Then she enters into the what they call the hacker's nest. The two are not so undercover agents identified as special operations within Homeland Security. They have their names and their divisions by the time she arrives. In the weeks since first contact, they have had several intrusions on their property. This is Felicity and Dahl. With warning shots from the armed drones. Also, identification of several other governmental agencies, FBI, CSA, CSI, and the military. Then, oh snap, Ava says, this is Devin's daughter. She's hacked into the budget committee and she's found several authorizations of a planned raid. She, as well as the other partners, come on site for the planned raid and also for legal representation. So when they had the special SEAL team agent jump in, they were all calmly seated in their named director's chair with their purse and IDs and some snacks. The other agents would ram through the gate. The power was on, but the snow on all of the monitors and the servers were offline. But even when they could restore power to the servers, because they were air servers, quantum computers, the information had been wiped and it had been backed up to a cloud inaccessible to these agents. The crew would be transported to Knoxville's airport and then flown to Quantico for questioning. They would be housed in a communal older barracks, but together. The children would read and were drawing with the adults working on complicated mathematical equations in the notebooks provided. each of the group singularly and then together would be introduced to an FBI profiler, Special Agent Griggs. She was very controlled, a former Marine and female, and also a boarded forensic psychiatrist. After each individual interview, she would walk around and then stops in front of Felicity, who had not stopped writing until she stood in front of her. She sheaves her pen, the agent picking up the notebook, scrutinizing, and then would say, "Complicated algorithms? Do you dream in equations?" And Felicity would go on to say, "It's how I relax." She notices the other notebooks, and then she says, "I have the feeling that what was wiped from your servers is stored in these." And she points to her head and in here. "You might be right," Felicity would say, "but you wouldn't be able to understand it." "That I agree," Agent Griggs would say. Felicity then says, "No, you wouldn't." And then the agent would say, "So what do they want?" And Felicity simply says, "They just want to talk and we can learn from one another." And then Griggs said, "Really? They don't want to conquer us?" And then Felicity says, Conquer us? Nah." And Dahl, "They don't need anything, but they live in a balance with their universe. And they're seeming willingly to show us how to do this. But for what price?" the agent says. Dahl says, "That's just it. Because they don't need anything, there is no concept of money or price. They have no concept of that, but only sharing information and helping." And then they would have to decide who they need to speak to first. And then Dahlwood says, "I think the military, we need to start there to convince them of the lack of a threat. And they also have the ability to travel great distances and utilize the power and convert the power of the universe to be able to make these. But again, they're a bit more than organized energy and force fields will allow them to travel in this way. And we have not that capability." All of this would be great. And the talks had already started with the U.S., the military, internal security, and all of the other governmental agencies. And then it would be expanded to Canada, Central America, Venezuela. Brazil would be sitting out, but they would also start the talks with the indigenous representatives at the request of the One. This new meeting would be very, very much different than anything depicted over sci-fi in the centuries, it seems, since third Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But the interaction necessary would be broadcast across social media internationally. There was a specific interaction between the indigenous people of the rainforest and their interest in magnifying the importance of the preservation of the rainforest and how that is possible. There are other ways to provide the basic necessities without completely destroying their universe. And the indigenous people have been chemically and biologically are better attuned to be able to communicate this. Because they've tried this once before with the interaction between the Mayan cultures and Aztec. The deciphering and the interaction of the ancient text that were buried in Machu Picchu and Montezuma. They've always been in contact with us, but we just didn't know how to interpreted from the oldest interactions in the ancient tribes of Africa and then throughout China. Specifically, being able in a, the contributions to mathematics, etc. The interactions would be expanded to the African nations and the Chinese, representing several different ethnic tribes within each one of those continents. The negotiations would start, and it was apparent that they would not need to be or not pay, that there was no pay for participation. But the technology would not be shared if it would not be appropriate to the betterment of all individuals within their cultures. It's not about cultural appropriation. It's not about imperialistic betterment of one culture of another. It's about being able to provide the basic necessities and the growth of education in your mind without a cost. And also, the information that would also come about was the lack of need to be dependent on petroleum and certain emissions, which threatened the Saudis greatly, but they had within their stockpile and also the means and the technology to be able to support the world's conversion and a rapid conversion from the dependence on their oil and still be able to contribute to the betterment of humanity by just allowing and protecting the environment and population. However, Russia was suspiciously quiet. It seems that they on the back end were negotiating with the North Koreans about who was to strike first in a very calculated response. They would launch multi-surface to air missiles simultaneously. Several wormholes would be open in the sky. Each missile would be surrounded and would grounded or be made inert. Each submarine, scarily close to the northern part of the European Union, several off of the coast of Europe, or of, excuse me, of Britain, Africa, South America, East and West, North America or the United States and Canada, and surrounding the Southeast Asia, all in high alert with the key for a nuclear holocaust being cut on. And it was absolutely frightening. The problem was they would try this. And each time they would try this, each one of these weapons of mass destruction, each missile, each bullet would be rendered inert and returned to its launch site. And it would be, we would be left with a frightening fireworks show that would be obliterated each and every time. The ones would keep the relaunching and the relaunching by neutralization. They would keep doing this until each side would stop and would talk. There would be no sharing of technology until it could be proven that they would not be using this technology to destroy another culture. It would only be used to help everyone, given us basically a level playing field. and it was all free there to the taking. And it wasn't just the Russians and the North Koreans. It was Iran, it was Iraq, and other members of the Middle Eastern Union. It would take them almost a very long, too long of a time, while the rest of the world for once decided that it was better to work on the ills, the societal ills together and for the betterment of mankind and to figure out a way forward. Then all what would happen is the people were tired of the shenanigans. In each one of these locales, there were images of leadership and separate regimes being tried and then being jailed. Ethiopia would rise as a symbol of African solidarity and a reinterpretation of the ancient texts from Coptic Christianity going way back prior to the ancient times prior to the Egyptians. There was the mathematics of Li Hu and the transmission of this information and knowledge from the Chinese imperial regimes all the way through to the Incas at Machu Picchu, the Druids, as well as the Mediterranean of the Galileans and even up to the Norwegians. All this information buried deep within the catacombs, predating the Dead Sea Scrolls. And that's where I am going to stop this reading. I have some other working out on the next chapter because there I want to work on a little bit more of when Dal Lundgren is reunited with his mother that has become for the last 20 odd years a Buddhist nun, and the next stage of the story is the somehow drawing in, because it is obvious that the ancient texts are, if you were to believe, the premise of my story is a lot of what we believe of our first interaction with extraterrestrials were basically misinterpreted into several and buried deep within several religions. And Buddhism, which is one of the most ancient Asian religions, and knowing that the Chinese and a lot in between the Chinese and, well, Africans and Chinese basically made so many contributions to calculation and to mathematics, it would make sense that some of their if you would explore the ancient texts, how the religion actually was an interpretation of the first contact with the extraterrestrials. And I'm going to need a little bit more time to explore that theme without being too blasphemous. It's going to require that I actually take a closer look and do a little bit more research into the Buddhist faith. Familiar, that is not R. Kelly, because that's how I don't roll like that. That is River from the Family Chantel fame, and it's his recently released EP, Birthday. And that's how I'm going to end this section, with great music. I was shocked. People that know me or watch the 90 Day, any of the 90 Day franchises, you know this family is cray. But I was actually really shocked when they released this on the Tell All that's on Discovery Plus. And everything that he's actually done. He's actually a very talented artist. I saw him rap at one point on The Family Chantal, and I don't really watch that show because, as I said, I think the family's crazy, and it was obvious that the mama was drunk on the tell-all. However, and I think his sister's stupid, but that's just me. But the song is good. I hope you enjoyed my reading from my sci-fi, as well as everything that I talked about from Star Trek, and I hope you have the opportunity to pick up one of the books that I actually highlighted in today's segment, as well as watch What We Left Behind, the documentary of DS9, and then join Club Quarantine as we celebrate and bring back music in this, the aftermath, because we're still in the the COVID Panera Bread, y'all. We got to find other positive ways to keep ourselves and our families safe. I hope you enjoyed listening to this effort, and thank you for joining me. Shoot me an email at tinfroisreading@gmail.com, or just leave a comment in the comment box about what songs that you would like to hear or what artists you would like me to feature on the next episode. And as always, y'all have a great week, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. And thanks for listening.